भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Srimad-Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 70, Lord Krishna's Daily Activities, Texts 45 through 47. We chant 45 responsibly. Word meaning, Sri Shuka Uvacha. Sukadeva Goswami said, Tatra, there, Teshu, they, the Yadavas, Atma, his own, Paksheshu, supporters, Agrinatsu, not agreeing, Vijigishaya, because of their desire to conquer Jarasandha, Vachaha, of speech, Eshai, with charming usage, Smayan, smiling, Brityam, to his servant, Uddhavam, Sri Uddhava, Raha, spoke Keshavaha, Lord Krishna.
Krishuka Uvacha Tatra Teshvatma Pakshesva.
Actually, you have to chant this way because of the meter, but actually, Agrinatsu is the word.
Agrinatsu Vijigishaya. Vacha Peshai Smaran Brityam Uddhavam Praha Keshava Krishuka Vacha Tatta Teshvatma Pakkeshva Vrinatsu Vijigishaya Vacha Peshai Smaran Brityam Uddhavam Praha Keshava Peshuka Vacha Tatta Teshvatma Pakshishva Vrinatsu Vijigishaya Vacha Peshai Smayan Brityam Uddhavam Praha Keshava.
Yishiru Vata Vihatsu Vijingishaya Vachavishas mayam vityam Uddhavam prahakeshavam Yeshuko vacha Astateshvatma pakshishva Vrinatsu vijikishaya Vachavishas mayam vityam Uddhavam Praha Keshava. Ladies, Tatra Teshvatma Pakshishva Vrinatsu Rijigishaya Vacha Peshasmayam Vityam Uddhavam Praha Keshava.
Translation, Sukadeva Goswami said, when his supporters, the Yadavas, objected to this proposal out of eagerness to defeat Jarasandha, Lord Keshava turned to his servant Uddhava and, smiling, addressed him with fine words. Before. So the Prabhupada explains, Just before the great sage Narada arrived in the Sudharma assembly house of Dwaraka, Lord Krishna and his ministers and secretaries had been considering how to attack the kingdom of Jarasandha. Because they were seriously considering this subject, Narada's proposal that Lord Krishna go to Hastinapur for Maharaj Yudhishthira's great Rajasuya sacrifice did not much appeal to them. Lord Krishna could understand the intentions of his associates because he is the ruler of even Lord Brahma. Therefore, in order to pacify them, he smilingly spoke to Uddhava. Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti points out that the Lord smiled because he was about to demonstrate Uddhava's brilliant ability to give counsel in difficult situations. The two more verses we can chant together. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Tam Hina Paramam Chakshu Surin Mantra Satatvavit Atatra Bhruya Nushisham. The personality of Godhead said, "You are indeed our best eye and closest friend, for you know perfectly the relative value of various kinds of counsel. Therefore, please tell us what should be done in this situation. We trust your judgment and shall do as you say."
Sarvagnenapi mubhavat videsham shirasadhaya udhava pratyabhashita.
Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus requested by his master, who, although omniscient, acted as if perplexed. Uddhava took this order upon his head and replied as follows. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 70th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Krishna's Daily Activity.
To reiterate what the purport says, the situation is that there are two proposals. One is that the Yadava soldiers, Krishna's army, go and defeat Jarasandha, and the other is that Krishna go to the Rajasuya sacrifice. So Narada has just been asking Krishna to come to the Rajasuya sacrifice, and the Yadavas, they're thinking, oh no, he goes there, we're not going to get a chance to fight. Because they're Kshatriyas. We're seeing here they're displaying some of the qualities of Kshatriyas. Krishna lists them in Bhagavad Gita. Shauryam Tejo Dityatakshyam Yudhe Chapya Palayanam Dhanamishwara Bhavascha Chatram Karma Svabhavajam. The first one is heroism. We hear often in descriptions of these different pastimes of Krishna references to the Yadu heroes or the Vrishni heroes. So there, we can imagine in this assembly, of course, these are not the rank and file soldiers here in the assembly hall. It's Krishna's, the leaders of the fighting forces. Like Satyaki is the commander in chief. And in different battles that take place that Krishna is involved in and his soldiers are there, the Yadava army. We often hear that Samba is one of the leaders, one of the generals. Pradyumna, Krishna's leading sons especially. So they are, Krishna has many Akshohinis. It seems like he can muster up as many as he wants according to the situation, according to whom he's fighting. So these sons of his are most likely in charge of Akshohinis themselves. They're great fighters, great warriors, great heroes. So shauryam means they're heroic. They're not afraid. This was one of the other qualities. Shauryam, tejo. The kshatriyas are supposed to have these qualities. Kshatram karma subhavajam. These are the qualities by which the kshatriyas work. heroism, determination, vritti. We can see how these qualities are not only for fighters, but also for administrators, for leaders in different ways. They have to have determination to see things through, not give up easily. Daksham. Daksham means, or is this like the word daksha? Daksha is generally translated as expert. In Bhagavad Gita, daksham is translated as resourcefulness. That means being able to get the job done. Something is assigned to you, you don't say, oh, no, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. That's generally the way I respond to things. I don't have the ability to do that. But daksham means resourcefulness. I'll figure out how to do it. Of course, one thing that kshatriyas have or managers have, this ability, they're not afraid to get on the phone and call someone and grab this person, grab that person, and bring things together. They have that aptitude and that natural tendency to do that kind of thing. Whereas others, they shy away from that kind of thing. The daksham, resourcefulness. I'll figure out how to do it. Just tell me how to do it. Of course, there's nothing managers like better than to have people under them who are like that. Just say, get it done, and it's done. So this is kshatriyas. They have this quality. Danam means they're very generous. You hear this over and over again. Even the enemies of Krishna, like Jarasandha himself, very generous. The Brahmin came to them. Anybody who needed anything. It's also, in some ways, of course, it can be changed with some pride. I have this great wealth, and look at me, I can give. Is actually one of the symptoms of the demoniac given in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So they're very proud of being able to help others. You see this in rich people today even. So dhanam ishvara bhava, this relates to also similar to what I was just saying. Ishvara bhava in the Gita is translated as leadership. But if you take it literally, it means ishvara bhava means to have that bhava of taking control, to be the Ishwara. In a situation where, just like if there's some catastrophe, something happens, so you'll see that certain people will come to the front and they'll say, all right, you do this, you do that. You know, they'll take control, organize things. They just have this natural tendency. So this Ishwara Bhava, the tendency to want to take control, this kshatriyas have. I often think how, of course, Krishna, he's the ultimate Ishwara, so he has Ishwara Bhava unlimitedly. And he wants to take control of us, actually. He wants to help us. But he has to control himself a little bit because he can't just force us to do things. He has to help us, but we have to be given the freedom to make our own mistakes. So his Ishwara Bhava is not overpowering the free will of the jiva. He allows the jiva some free will to make his own choices and make his own mistakes, make the right choices. So this yudhe chapya palayanam, I skipped that one. That means they don't flee from battle. They're not afraid when the battle comes. Yeah, I was thinking today how of course, the military is supposed to be kshatriyas, and the police force, they're supposed to be kshatriyas. But that's the desire to fight, to engage in battle, is usually not the motive for people joining the military today. Actually, I can say myself, I went to a military school, but I had no inclination toward military life whatsoever. I went there because it was a free education. So many people, they join the military for that specific reason. What do the recruiters? The recruiters don't say, come on, join the army and you'll get killed on the battlefield. you'll get a chance to kill other people. No, they say, come on, we'll give you a free education. We'll train you and so on. So that's the allure the recruiters use to get people into the military. You get good benefits, you know, when you get a retirement after so many years, you get a pension. And these are the hooks by which they get them in. So they don't have really this yudhe chapya palayanam. Of course, we saw in the Vietnam War, there were a lot of people, everyone was being recruited. There's no question of what your nature was. So people didn't want to fight. They had no stomach for it. The Kshatriyas, they're different. Here we see these, the Yadavas, they're eager for it, they're itching for it, and they want to fight. Just like Apriksit said about him, when he heard there was some disturbance on Kali, that he was, I'll get a chance to do something, get a chance to use my skills. But today it's so different. Last week I was at a hotel and they give a free newspaper, USA Today, so I was flipping through it. And there was an article in there. It was about a policeman who was becoming a vegan. But he was doing it for health reasons. So there was a caption underneath a picture of, I forget what the picture was, but the caption said something like, a police officer is 25 times more likely to die of weight-related illnesses than to die from violence. So for the Kshatriya today, the battlefield isn't dangerous. Dunkin' Donuts is dangerous. That's the most dangerous place today. So it's not like they have this, obviously they have these Kshatriya qualities. They're there for other reasons also. Of course, they may be. I mean, people do have also that tendency, even today. Some people have it. Prabhupada, or Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, there are four classes of people. So there are people who, they don't shy away from violence. And most of us, just like sometimes I hear, just the other day, someone was killed on the interstate last week. She ran off the road and was hit head on. She had a small car and she died. Now I've seen the people that have to go to those scenes, they have to rush into them. So they have to have a certain stomach for that kind of thing. Most of us, we may look from a distance, but we don't want to be up close and see all the blood and guts and so on. We even see this in the Bhagavatam, where Krishna is involved in different fights, different battles. Of course, in Vrindavan, Krishna kills so many demons there. Then as soon as he gets to Mathura, then Jarasandha's, after he kills Kamsa, then Jarasandha, after hearing from Jarasandha's, or Kamsa's wives, so Jarasandha starts attacking Mathura. And to protect the Mathura city, then Krishna, of course, engages in battle. And there apparently, although Krishna had, the Yadavas already had an army at that time, Krishna did all the fighting, Krishna and Balaram. In fact, what happens there in that, when Jarasandha comes, then Krishna, he says to Balaram, says, now this is that we've come here for a purpose. We've come to this world to kill demons, to lift the burden of Bhumi Devi. So this is our time. Now we're really, we've killed a few demons in Vrindavan, but now we're going to really get into it. Now we've graduated to the big time. We're really going to get into it. So then their chariots descend from the sky. Their chariots and their weapons descend from the sky. So then they go out to fight. And at first, I think they were described, in a couple places described how, yes, I think their Jarasandha is first, his army is sending all these torrents of arrows and so on. And it says that the Yadu soldiers are suffering from it. But we know at the end that none of them get killed, because that's what happens. The Krishna Balaram, they take charge and they kill every single soldier except Jarasandha. All of Jarasandha's whole army, I forget how many Akshahinis he had, quite a few. So Krishna and Balaram kill all of them, and they don't lose one soldier on their side. And this happens over and over and over again every time Jarasandha comes with his army. So of course, when it first happened, there was the idea that the Yadavas, they captured Jarasandha and they wanted to kill him, actually, like everybody else. But Krishna said, no, we'll use him. Krishna's Yukta Vairagya. Krishna's going to use him because he's such an idiot. He's going to keep bringing back more armies. He never learns. Sometimes he gets discouraged. Oh, maybe this is a bad idea, attacking Krishna. Actually, he didn't lose one soldier. I lost millions. But then his advisors say, no, he just had a bad day. So he keeps coming back and coming back and coming back. So Krishna's wholesale slaughter. So actually in the first one, the description of the first battle, it's described how there were rivers of blood. Because Krishna's not just killing the soldiers, he's killing all the horses and elephants and all the animals too. You read this and you think, wow, why is Krishna doing this? They're demons too in bodies of these animals. But it's such an amazing scene Rivers of blood, and then trunks and arms and heads and all these things. They are in the Sanskrit, actually, in the verses, how each thing, some of the body parts look like boulders, and the hair looks like moss. But they said, you know, those who have weak stomachs, they can't look at it. But the Kshatriyas, they're cheering. Yeah, all right, this is great. So they're different. We have to see that people have different characteristics, different qualities, different natures. So the Yadavas soldiers, here we see they want to fight. They get a chance to fight here and there. Like when Krishna went to kidnap Rukmini. He went by himself, actually. He got the letter from Rukmini, and he just went alone. And then Balaram heard, maybe from Narada. Narada's always delivering messages here and there. That there were so many other soldiers. Well, naturally, there were soldiers vying. They wanted to have Rukmini for themselves, so they'd come with their armies and so on. The princes had their own armies. So Balaram goes there, and he, to back up Krishna. And of course, there is a fight, ultimately. And in the beginning, it seems like the Yadavas are losing. Krishna's on the chariot with Rukmini. And then he says, don't worry. He tells her, don't worry. You will see how your army is going to fight now. In the purport, there's an explanation there how Krishna is telling her, this is your army now. You're my wife. You're going to be my wife. These are your men here. What a optimist that is, huh? To have a whole army. That's yours. At your beck and call, to have a whole army. So this is part of the opulence, giving you a little insight into the kind of opulence you can expect by being married to me. You had this whole army. Then, of course, Krishna routed the opponents, and the fighting was so fierce that they all retreated. All the other armies retreated, including in those armies, the supporters. Of course, Shishupal was supposed to marry Rukmini. This was arranged by Rukmini. So Shishupal was very upset. And when he saw everyone leaving, come on, guys, don't leave me now. But even Jarasandha said, no, this is not the time. Kala or Daiva, whatever, destiny is not on our side at this moment. So they all gave up, except Rukmini, of course. Rukmini didn't give up. He kept pursuing Krishna, and we know what happened to him. He ultimately became humiliated. So this is one example. Like in general, when Krishna went to fight, his army either came with him or showed up. When he went to get Satya, Satya was the one where he had to fight with seven bulls, control seven bulls. So Krishna, it says there that Krishna went with a large army. And in one place, I think Prabhupada says it, there's four Akshohinis. So in that fight also, there's a big fight. Banasura, that was a huge battle. I'm just kind of reviewing some of the times where the Yadavas got to fight. Seems like sometimes Krishna brought his whole army and sometimes only brought part of it. Because in the fighting with Banasura, of course, the background of that is Usha and Aniruddha. Those of you who know the story, that Usha saw some handsome prince in a dream. Then he was, by some mystic power, he was brought to her. That was Aniruddha. So then she was the daughter of Banasura, a big demon, Asura. So he was actually gone for 4 months. The Yadavas, everyone in Dwarka, they didn't know where Aniruddha was. He was gone for 4 months. So finally, this, I know for sure, Narada delivered the news, told the Yadavas, the residents of Dwarka, where Aniruddha was. So they went to get Aniruddha back, and there was a big battle. And in this battle, there were 12 Akshohinis on both sides. So this is more than Kurukshetra. Amazing how big a battle this was. 12 on each side. And of course, there was a big fight there that took place. So many soldiers were killed. Let's see. Then finally, now there, I just wanted to mention a couple of times where Krishna, sometimes Krishna just goes alone and fights. When he fought with Narakasura, the context, this is when he had Satyabhama with him. So he went, Narakasura had stolen a few things. He had stolen the playground of the demigods. So So that really made them mad. Whatever that is, I'm not sure exactly. It's called Mani Parvat. Most money means jewel. Well, Jewel Mountain, that's where they hang out, the demigods. So he had stolen that, this Narakasura. He had stolen the earrings of Aditi. Aditi is the mother of the demigods, the main demigods, the Adityas, including Lord Indra. And he had stolen Varuna's umbrella. When I heard that, Varuna's umbrella, I guess there's something important about that. Just like we hear one thing that's curious to people. I remember when Damodara Maharaj was, one time he was giving class and he mentioned how his parents started, when he became a devotee, he started reading Bhagavad Gita, and the whole idea just seemed so outrageous to them that these heroes were blowing these conch shells, and somehow this created such terror in the hearts of the other side. And thought, this is ridiculous, blowing a conch shell. But actually, conch shells, this comes up repeatedly in the Bhagavatam, where someone blows the conch shell and then terrorizes the other side. So this has significance. So similarly, Varuna's umbrella somehow has some great significance. In fact, Varuna, in the pastime of the coronation of King Prithu, different personalities, highly posted personalities around the universe, they're giving Prithu different things. And Varuna gives King Prithu an umbrella that was as brilliant as the moon and that constantly sprayed a very fine mist of water. So when it's hot, that's really nice. Have an umbrella that keeps you cool at the same time. But somehow or other, this umbrella of Varuna is an important thing. So Narakasura had stolen these things, and Krishna was going there with Satyabhama to retrieve them. And here Krishna fought alone. First he killed the Mura demon, who had three heads and three legs, I think, or something strange like that. And he had to go through these fortifications. There was some thing that was sort of like a big giant fan that had this razor sharp blade spinning around, the contraption Krishna had to get through, and so on. So he went through all that, and ultimately, of course, he defeated Narakasura. And then Paundraka also, when he went to fight with Paundraka, he went there alone also. Paundraka, the imitation Vishnu, he went there to fight with him. And he didn't bring his army. Apparently, they're not described, at least, in any of the verses. And when Paundraka fought with Krishna, the king of Kashi was also there, and he was fighting on Paundraka's side. So he had five divisions, or there was a total of five divisions between Paundraka's army and Kashi's army. There were five divisions of soldiers, and Krishna defeated all of them single-handedly. Sometimes it's described that when he shoots his bow, his arrows, people think this is so primitive, you know, people fighting with bows and arrows. But when Krishna fights, there's nothing primitive about it. It's like a Gatling gun, a machine gun coming out. Like torrents of arrows are coming from the sky. You know, this raises an image in my mind. And when I was a kid, I saw this movie, 300 Spartans, I think it was. And they were highly outnumbered. It's thousands of these Persians, I think it was. So there's a scene there where the other army, that tens of thousands of soldiers, are all shooting their arrows at the same time. So they're just raining down. Small band of soldiers. So that's what it's like when Krishna shoots his arrows. They're just unlimited arrows are just tormenting the other side, destroying their armies completely. So that's something a little bit about the Yadavas. They're getting a chance to fight. Here they're stir picking. They might not be able to fight. So Krishna says, well, Uddhava, what do you think? Basically is what's going to happen now. Uddhava is such a trusted minister of Krishna. Of course, he's so close to Krishna. Uddhava is unique among the Dwarakavasis because he's always with Krishna. He's really his closest friend is Uddhava. He gets to eat with him, and he gets to take naps with him, and he just does everything with him. And Krishna turns to him for advice. And of course, Krishna sends him on extremely important missions. He sent him to Vrindavan. Just imagine how important that was. You want someone you trust, send on a confidential mission, because you want someone, we use the expression, someone who can think on their feet. If a situation arises, they have to know what to do without, you know, getting on the cell phone and calling the boss and saying, what do I do now? They have to know how to act in a situation. They have to know the desires and the will and the mind of their boss, the person for whom they're on the mission. So Uddhava, he's going to Vrindavan to see the gopis. Well, he's on his own, no contact with Krishna. So he has to respond to the situation. So Krishna is sending his most trusted minister and friend to go there on that extremely important mission. So here Krishna is turning to him. And here, of course, the commentary says that Krishna wants to show off Uddhava, basically. He wants to show the Yadavas how great this person is. And Krishna is proud of him. This is my friend here, Uddhava. He's very proud that I have this friend like this. And I love him so much. Someone I was reading the other day after this, it kind of struck me the way it was phrased. But Krishna loves his devotees so much that he just wants them with him. He wants to bring them to him. That's basically how you get back to Godhead. That Krishna loves you so much. You've pleased him so much that he just wants you with him. He wants to bring you to him. So Krishna loves Uddhava so much that he wants others to see. Just he's like overwhelmed with his appreciation and affection for this devotee. And he wants others just see how intelligent this devotee of mine is, this servant of mine. Here the word is used, Britya, Krishna's servant. Just see how wonderful he is. He wants to reveal this so that others can see and appreciate as he's appreciating, because out of his own bhava, his own ecstasy, he wants to share this with others. So we'll see now in the next chapter how Uddhava is going to resolve this apparent problem between Krishna going here or there. So I'll just, maybe I can read through these translations again. Sukadeva Goswami said, when his supporters, the Yadavas, objected to this proposal out of eagerness to defeat Jarasandha, Lord Keshava turned to his servant Uddhava and, smiling, addressed him with fine words. The personality of Godhead said, you are indeed our best eye and closest friend, for you know perfectly the relative value of various kinds of counsel. Therefore, please tell us what should be done in this situation. We trust your judgment and shall do as you say. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus requested by his master, who, though omniscient, acted as if perplexed, Uddhava took this order upon his head and replied as follows. Questions or comments?
I wonder about Ugrasen. Ugrasen is supposed to be the king, but whenever we see what happens here, it's always Krishna's making decisions. I just wanted to get a comment on that.
Yeah, I'm thinking in Dwarka, in Mathura, in fact, it seems to me this is in the Bhagavatam. I remember reading this. Maybe it was in the Gopala Champu. Where Ugrasena, when Krishna first defeats Kamsa, Ugrasena wants Krishna to rule. But Krishna says, no, it's not proper. You're actually the king, so you should rule. So he's ruling in Mathura. But then Krishna builds Dwarka, and we know that Ugrasena is there. But somehow we see that maybe it's just spontaneous and natural thing that everybody just turns to Krishna. We could infer that from what goes on there, because it's true. We don't really see Ugrasena taking control. And of course, we can also see that maybe Ugrasena is there even in the assembly. I don't know. But this is about Krishna. This is about Krishna's Leela. So naturally, we're hearing about what Krishna is doing. But it does seem to be that he's in charge. Now, you might say, well, maybe Krishna's like the prime minister or something like that. And so he's Ugrasena is saying, yeah, you make the decisions. I'll back up whatever you say. Actually, I didn't make this point. It's very nice here. In fact, one of the acharyas, I think Vishwanath, says, the wise Krishna says, we trust your judgment and shall do as you say. So Krishna is saying, Uddhava, whatever you say, that's what we're going to do. No question about it. We're not going to second guess. Whatever you say, that's what we're going to do. And that's how much faith Krishna has in the judgment of Uddhava. So we could say that Ugrasena, of course, has the same faith in the judgment of Krishna. He's letting him control the situation. But it's not mentioned specifically. We can just infer certain things. Dimashini Prabhu?
A couple questions. Is there an Aishvarya element in the relationship between Uddhava and Krishna?
Yeah, Uddhava's relationship with Krishna is, isn't it explained somewhere that it's Dasya mixed with Sakya? Something like that. So in Dasya, you can say there's a certain Aishvarya because there's that, the master, he's superior. So they're friends, but at the same time, he's called Vritya, so he also sees himself as Krishna's servant. So it seems like he relishes both of those relationships at the same time. This is spelled out by the Acharya somewhere, but I can't remember exactly the reference.
It doesn't seem, you know, like with that Aishvarya, there's a certain blockage, you know, in the intimacy of the relationship.
Yeah. Well, of course, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you know, things get higher and higher and higher. So when Narada goes to Dwarka, he's sent there from where? Ayodhya, maybe? So when he meets the Yadus, and he glorifies the Yadus in general, and then they say, well, the most fortunate among us is Uddhava. So he's considered to be the highest among the residents of Dwarka is Uddhava. But then Uddhava, I don't know, maybe he sends him directly to Gopis, maybe. I'm not sure. I don't remember how it goes from there. But of course, Uddhava, he knows his position relative to the residents of Vrindavan. He's seen what they're like. So there, the intimacy, of course, is greater. So there, he's a friend. He's a friend of, even in Vrindavan, there are three categories of friends. Some are more intimate. Those who are younger, they're not quite as intimate. Those who are equal in age to Krishna, they're the most intimate. And then there are those who are a little bit older. So they have a little bit of a parental relationship. Although, you know, you say intimate, well, Krishna's parents certainly have an intimate relationship with Krishna. In fact, it's considered higher, in a sense, than Sakya Bhava. And ultimately, of course, the gopis. So, yeah, I mean, Uddhava is not on the level of the residents of Vrindavan, but still, at least in Dwarka, he's considered to be Krishna's closest friend. He's able to do, you know, imagine taking a nap with Krishna. pretty intimate friendship. You don't do that with just anybody, obviously.
And the other question is the Ishvara Bhav, which is a big part of the nature of a Kshatriya. It seems that as one advances in Krishna consciousness, it's something that one has to adjust and understand that Krishna is the actual controller. I'm just his instrument. Seems like that's almost the source of
the anartha. Well, of course, one thing we know about advanced, that actually came from this tape, the memoirs about how deep the pure devotee's consciousness is. So these paradoxes somehow resolve themselves. In other words, you can have Ishvara Bhava and still feel yourself subordinate to Krishna. If the Bhava was felt, how can one be a Rajarshi? The two just seem to be at opposite ends. Because a Rishi is humble and surrendered and so on, meek. But Raja has to be on the other side. Even Yudhisthira maybe had a problem because he had a little bit too much Rishi. Whereas Bhima, he had a little more Raja and a little less Rishi. So somehow both of these things can coexist in the great Mahabhagavats, the great devotees. So the devotee can feel, for Krishna, I'll take control. And I can even, because that's naturally my nature, and I can exhibit it when the time is needed, but I'm doing it in the service of Krishna. Then it's Krishna consciousness, spiritual, when it's used in the service of Krishna. But of course, for us, you can say, yeah, it's a bit of it's a kind of contamination. Ishvara aham aham bhogi. I think I'm the Ishvara, I think I'm the controller, whereas Krishna is the controller. So, yeah, it can be a contamination. But anything can be spiritualized, it's used in the service of Krishna. In fact, we could say that's how we spiritualize it. Don't take control for myself, take control of things for spreading Krishna consciousness. In fact, I often think it's good to have a little of that if you're a book distributor, because what the book distributors do, they take control of the situation, really. You have to have a little bit of that. You can't just be so meek that you don't dare to say anything. You sort of like give them a book and then you take control of it. You get the money. So you have to have a little bit of that Ishvara. It helps to have a little bit of that Ishvara Bhava. Not be so very timid. It helps to have that. So to spread Krishna consciousness, you can definitely use that Bhava. So then how great it is. Distribute many books. Bring people to Krishna. Take control of them. We also see devotees that like that. You know, they meet someone and they're, you know, do this, do that, come to the temple. And so it's good. If you have that nature, use it in the service of Krishna. Wonderful. Even Prabhupada himself, he certainly had that. He wasn't from a Kshatriya caste, but he certainly knew how to take control of the situation and make things happen. We need people who make things happen. Leaders. In fact, Prabhupada, this idea of Rajarshi, Prabhupada told, especially the sannyasis, he said, you must become expert preachers and expert managers. These two things. He wanted. So a preacher is a Brahmin and a manager is a Kshatriya. So Rajarshi, again, this is this. But still, a manager, what is a manager? A manager takes control, makes things right. So do it for Krishna, then it's glorious. In fact, I think we need a few more of those around ISKCON, don't we? Things tend to get out of control. We need things to need people to take control for Krishna. Yes.
Since you were mentioning book distribution and Kshatriya and all that kind of stuff, prior to becoming a devotee, I was a very meeky, mild sort of person. As a devotee, one time in Chicago O'Hare Airport, I was distributing books and standing away from everybody. I was in a separate concourse. And this gentleman came to the airport and decided he wanted to fight with the Hare Krishna. So I was the lucky one who was chosen. He walked up to me and he knocked the book bag out of my hand, so the books landed on the ground. And he started throwing punches at me. Just crazy, just throwing wild punches at me. So being in O'Hare Airport and knowing there was a lot of people watching, one hand, my left hand, I was holding my wig on. Because, you know, I want to keep the appearance of, you know, hair on my head. With the other hand, I put it on his forehead. And I was trying to keep him at bay because he was a little bit shorter than I was. So I thought, I'll keep him at bay just by doing this. And I was talking to him, you know, sort of casual. What are you doing? You know, what the heck? And the guy just kept throwing punches at me. So I thought, you know, he's actually here to fight the Hare Krishna. And it was at that moment that I realized I actually have a bit of Kshatriya in me. And so I stopped, planted my foot, and dropped him with one punch down to the ground. Yeah. And he actually, I hit him so hard, you know, Krishna gave me some serious potency. I'd never thrown a punch before in my life, but I hit him so hard I actually cracked his nose, and it was actually dangling down and blood was shooting out. And he got up off the ground and started coming at me again. And I looked at him, I said, are you kidding me? I said, are you kidding me? I said, I just put you on the ground with one punch and you got to come back at me again? So then he just stopped and he realized, yeah, probably not a good idea. And he started kicking the books. So that kind of ticked me off. But by that time, the police just showed up and sort of calmed the situation. But the fun part was when I went back to the temple. Because in in Chicago Temple, we had this giant blackboard where we would write our scores, and everybody would see the scores, because O'Hare, Chicago, was that's all it was about, book distribution. So we had everyone's scores, and at the top it said, Jivanath 1, Demons 0. And that was a good story. But I actually realized, you know, being a Kshatriya in Krishna's service is not such a bad thing.
Yeah, even the idea of not being afraid. I was thinking of that amazing story that Kamaharprabhu tells about somebody, you know, putting a gun to his head and pulling the trigger, not going off. Not just the fact that he didn't faint shows that maybe he had a little shift here, because I think I would have just fainted as soon as that gun came to my head. So devotees, yeah, by Krishna's mercy, we have to show some courage, which is also the Kshatriya quality. All right, we'll stop here. Prabhupada ki jai.